get a chance with our next podcast to talk to the partner, co-founder, co-director, partner in crime for the Center for Relational Leadership and Learning, Susan Chambers Otero. And we have been kind of living out relational leadership in every aspect of our lives, professionally and personally. And often in the mornings, an insight will come watching a news program or review of something that happened the evening before. And if anything, Susan is our organization's expert in the moment, the message of the moment. And I wanted to start with one for this podcast because we're now trying to promote that the relationship, especially in these times, is what matters most, and that you can consciously take over the way you're living in relationship to others. And this morning, your comment, Susan, was it isn't what you know, but your relationship to what you know. That seems to be a pretty important rule of thumb, maybe applying to your work and what we know. Could you say a little bit more about why that would be true in today's world?
Well, I think it's probably always true, but watching the Stephen Sondheim's interview on Stephen Colbert's show was like watching a master.
Mm.
It was like a master class.
Yeah.
Right. In terms of his relationship to his work.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I was hearing the perspective from which he spoke to the work that he was still doing at clearly an advanced age. And so what occurred to me was how, you know, so much of the earlier stages of development in life, 20s and 30s, is people often trying to find who they are personally and then hopefully how that can manifest in the work they're doing, because that's what makes it rewarding and meaningful, right? Mm. That somehow your work allows an expression of yourself in a developmental sense.
That might be something that's occurring with the impact of COVID, because as you know, many people are just not going back to work under the same conditions.
Right.
And surveys report that people can't find themselves in their work.
That's
that
right.
It was a bit mechanical. And that means they may have missed what you were kind of indicating is, people feel they became competent, but they had no relationship to that competence, to that experience in themselves, which I know you're doing now in your role, of working with people in the psychotherapy realm. What is the core of your message to people in general, since you don't do traditional clinical therapeutic approaches, find and fix it, which is one of our themes, as you know, is let's move to at least predict and prevent, but more often listen and respond.
Well, at my interest at both my age and in terms of what's happening in the world is looking at both the developmental and hopefully transformational opportunity that this kind of time is offering, if you know to look for it, right?
How do you help people in that sense look for it, notice it, instead of just living fear or wishing things could return to the past or wallowing in victimhood?
Well, it's almost an educational process of moving people into an awareness that living only in the mental mind is never going to be for most people satisfying or fulfilling, right? It's with acknowledgement to Gabor Mate, one of the things that he premises that I use a lot is this idea that the trauma, not only of personal life, but of collective life right now with this way of living has disconnected us from not only our personal self, but for me, the collective community.
Yeah.
And so to that degree, as we're living it out through all the political upheaval, at least in this country, this battle for being able to live in a more meaningful way, right? And so returning, understanding where people are caught in their mind, then try to begin to help them reconnect to their larger self, which is always through their subjective emotional feelings and emotions. Because modern life is constructed as much as possible to avoid them. Or in the traditional, you know, kind of British stiff upper lip culture that used to dominate is that you don't, that self-indulgence. So you just keep moving and bypassing it rather than understanding there's a developmental aspect critical to your own growth by moving through it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like the area you mentioned when we've done these 20 plus, almost 30 learning journeys or study tours with educators from all over the world over the years. One of the things that has been a metaphor or a meaningful expression of what it means to lead yourself in relation, relationally, is walking on
two legs.
And that has been a stunning sense of recognition for people for what you're talking about having the experience of what's happening around you, but then more importantly, the experience internally of who and what you are. And as you said right this morning, what you know, it's your relationship to what you know or what's happening to you. Right. Could you say a little bit more about where you heard that tradition and why that metaphor seems to be such a good one for relational leadership, which is what we're trying to promote now here at our center?
Well, to answer the first question, it was, there is something about the quality of Stephen Sondheim's being. The arts, at the highest sense, are always a doorway.
Oh, sure.
Right. And that, then, is what made Colbert's jacket note so powerful to both of them. Right? They were both kind of tearing up because that's what Colbert said. The impact on him as a young man years ago was seeing this particular play, musical, I guess, that showed him that that's where he wanted to go when he saw the art of it, the music, the storyline, the acting, and how it all converged. And
a quality of being in and with something.
Yeah, and he, in him, my perception was that we all have those moments, if we allow ourselves, where we recognize something we don't know, but we know it.
Yeah.
And so with Colbert, his recognition of what it was that the mastery of Sondheim was that he'd reached an age and a mastery of the medium,
mm-hmm.
which was the Broadway musical, that he no longer was in any way having to prove or trying to prove himself.
That's... That so many people are trying to still do that.
Because that's what this culture says it's about. It's mm-hmm. about the performance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about the beingness
mm.
and the kind of knowledge
mm.
Where the joy of it becomes at this point in his life, as I saw it, where you don't have to try to establish yourself.
Mm.
And it isn't just a performance prove it expression anymore, but rather he's reached the point where he can relax enough into it that he just allows it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He's not trying to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And that has fits with that sense of performing, but also relating to who
right.
you are as you
right.
do it.
I mean, he's doing the hard work of it,
yes.
you know, meeting with the lyricists and the
yeah.
directors and the writers
yeah.
and composing and staging and all mm. of that. But it's also becomes a thing of joy because there's a point at which applies to leadership, that there's a wisdom and understanding that it's not that you're the leader, it's that the leadership comes through you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you mentioned also the little buzz in the background, but, you know, everybody's phones are always ringing. And this morning, another thing that caught me that you said, which this expresses, is that with Sondheim and others, and at least our goal to help ourselves and others reach through relational leadership is that point where at some point you can just live what you do, versus some kind of forced action to it. And that comes with that metaphor again of the rhythm of walking, not just what you're doing, not just your reflection on it, but the combination of walking on both feet. And in fact, with your lovely story, which we've often talked about what art and beauty do for that, at some point, you could just love what you do as well as live it. Sitting in yourself and living from that.
Right.
That was the quote this morning. Is that again, kind of summarize in a sense where
yeah.
where you think the baseline is for relational leadership?
Well, yes, because, for example, it could be, you know, the true gardener.
Oh, yes.
Right? The real cook.
Mm.
These trades and ultimately art forms,
mm.
right, are a really good example where it's a practice.
Yeah.
It's the way you relate to it. It's your relationship to the act of cooking or gardening, right? Or creating art or raising children, right? It's all about, you know, living in the space of allowing and responding to the enjoyment.
Yeah, yeah,
of
to the experience
yeah.
of being alive. I was going to give a new title. Maybe we should do that sometime. I think it's been what we've been about together, both in Taos and at the Mabel Dodge Lujan House and through our lives now and traveling around the world. It's essentially the art of living.
Yeah.
And one of the things we're encouraging and supporting people in doing, which you do so well, is becoming conscious of this way of living. There's a kind of awareness, a consciousness that people could, what, learn, become better at than just letting things happen to them?
Well, for me, it's predicated on my belief that ultimately what life is meant to be is developmental.
Okay.
Right? Hmm. And that there are these stages of life that is critical to build the foundation for the next stage of development.
Right? Yeah.
And so one of the things they're finding collectively, culturally, is that so many kids are so disengaged from so many things because the parenting, with the parents going off to work, there wasn't the kind of fundamental relational neurology, which science is now showing through Stephen Porges' work and the polyvagal theory, that the nervous system and the predisposition towards life is actually developed in utero by the emotional tone of the mother. Right? And then as what to me is such a beautiful notion is that the baby doesn't know it exists or is here yet until it looks into the eyes of another.
Wow. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that bonding, that's what's called attachment now, is what is so critical in terms of life then being a positive, wonderful thing, or a very traumatic thing in which you have to go into a whole other neurological state to survive it.
Almost like a protection.
Yeah.
And avoiding what it's all about. It's the trauma. It's the trauma.
Yeah.
In an interesting way, I've been thinking about that, and we're working with a project with the University of New Mexico on the baby and their world of relationships and how key that stage is, and we were commenting on the fact that in one sense that it's not an I that forms a we, it's the we that spawns the I from your story.
That's right.
If you get, I mean, we could talk a whole session on that, like always our conversations led to, which leaves me kind of always excited, and I think that's one of the things we're suggesting that you find that the people you work with and others and ourselves, that when you take this pause and reflect on how you create the way you relate, there's tremendous energy that comes to you and a kind of newness and freshness and presence that so many people talk about. And you can, in a sense, discard all of those memories and traumas if you can begin to focus more on creating the way that you relate, which is what we're hoping to help people do here at the center now in the next couple years.
Well, because even that, for most people, is a developmental step of consciousness to get to the point that that's even an option.
I agree. And we will have to do another session on that developmental aspect and what you see as the clues so people understand that developmentally it's happening. But often people lose a sense of what that developmental process is, and they get stuck in a trauma response, or they get stuck in explaining or defending, or they start, you said earlier again this morning, they get living from the P words, pleasing,
performing.
The development process stops when they focus too much on these P words, these behaviors.
Well, that again is a consequence of going back to Gabor Mate's theories, and my experience has mirrored his, is that the disconnection from self is the fundamental human trauma. That there's almost always a point in a child's development in which he gets the feeling that he can't be who he is.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's a great way to say it. So that would be one of the major signposts. And that you help that with client, and we need to all work on that. I know that in my own experience. You start to get the feeling that you can't be who you are, and right. It just starts shaking the walls of your structure right. as a human being. But that was so clear with our study tour, especially the last one we could have before this COVID, when you had all those young women coming, and they just came already in that stance of not knowing how to trust their impulse and their experience again. Right. And they were good folks. There wasn't any real disasters, but it was this signpost you're talking about. That's right. That's such a key place to leave this discussion. But and I want to say, because as a real partner and key associate, and over the years, as we now are launching and sharing these podcasts, if anyone's out there listening and you'd like to talk further with Susan, because she has a special skill in helping someone recover their sense of self and their own experience as they live out their life and creating the way they relate, just send an email to us. The contacts are there. And set up a chance to have a chat or check in with Susan. That's how we work here. We have a whole team of real close associates. And we all know that there's a million ways to that sense of creating the way you relate. And we're here to help people find the way to do that for themselves. So I want to thank you. It often seems a little formal when we talk every day and have worked together all our lives, but thanks for giving this formal sense a shot. So thank you.
More than welcome.
Okay.